Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, Episode 5, The Enterprise Pilot, Broken Bow.
For decades, we've dreamed of traveling beyond our solar system. This fall, we will.
Today, we are about to cross a new threshold.
Witness the beginning of the Star Trek saga.
Starfleet seems to think that we're ready to begin our mission.
Don't screw this up.
The first captain.
Request permission to get underway.
Take her out, Mr. Mayweather.
The first crew.
They have two settings, stun and kill. It would be best not to confuse them.
The first trek into the final frontier.
Neptune and back in 6 minutes.
Just a little trouble with the bad guys.
You might think about recommending seatbelts when we get home.
A new era of discovery is about to begin.
Let's go.
Enterprise launches Wednesday, September 26th on UPN.
Where is Broken Bow, Oklahoma?
I don't know. Is it a real place? Let's look it up.
They assume
you,
it must
didn't
be.
Didn't you
right?
live in Oklahoma?
I lived in Edmonton, Oklahoma. Which is, or no, Edmonton
is in Canada.
And probably somewhere else, but yeah. Edmond, Oklahoma, which is like
sure which part of
suburbs of Oklahoma City.
Broken Bow is a small city in southeastern Oklahoma. It's
no
a gateway
there.
To Beavers Bend State Park.
Beavers Bend.
Home to black bears, bald eagles, and pine forest trails.
Bald.
The park's Forest Heritage Center Museum explores the role of forestry in local life.
They didn't have a lot of pine forest there. It looked like a bunch of cornfield.
Broken Bow Lake has islands, beaches, boat ramps, and fish, such as largemouth bass. Oh, such as largemouth bass.
Such as largemouth bass.
I presumed a list was coming.
Yeah, you were wrong.
I was wrong.
And no Klingons.
Anyway, welcome to It's Got Star Trek episode something or other. Five, I guess? Would it be five? Presumably this is episode 5 in this series on the Star Trek pilot episodes.
It's near Arkansas.
We've already done...
I don't know if that's good or bad. Is that good or bad?
And we've done TNG, and we've done DS9, and we've done Voyager.
Feeling fine with DS9.
And now we are on to Star Trek Enterprise, which premiered a few weeks after the tragic events of September 11th, 2001.
Oh, okay. It did, really?
Yeah,
okay.
I think it premiered September 27th, 2001.
Yeah, at the end of the month.
Obviously, it was produced ahead of that. But it occupies an interesting space in that it was the first season, or much of it anyway, was produced prior to September 11th. So it was in that weird pre-September 11th world that all of us here know and remember vaguely, but that younger folks don't know about the freedoms we had back then.
Mm-hmm.
We could walk.
When
our dad or mom went to the airport on a flight, we could walk right up to the gate and say, "Goodbye, I love you, Dad. Have
Goodbye.
A good trip.
I love you, Dad. I love you, Dad.
And Mama. You too, Mama.
Mama.
We all talked a little bit different back in those
Mama.
Days, too. We had to take on a more urbanite.
Urbanite?
Accent when we after those the tragedy just knocked the southern boy out of us.
Mama.
Oh, wait. Now, no, wait. Was this was way before Janet Jackson showing her tit, though, right?
I don't know.
Don't remember.
I don't think it was way before,
because we had more freedoms before that too.
We did. Mm-hmm. A few more. That was the beginning.
I guess arguably 9/11. Well, I don't know. Which was more devastating to America?
I think I blocked all
9/11 or... Wait. 9/11, Janet Jackson, or Star Trek Enterprise?
Oh, shit. Gotta rank it. Man, that's rough.
I liked Enterprise.
Yeah,
a show,
I did. I liked it, too. I like it. I like that
you
show,
know,
too.
I didn't really care for it back in the day. Like, I saw that pilot, and, you know, I was, like, in my 20s, and I was a shit. So I was like, But, you know, I watched the pilot again, and I did like it a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, there's a lot about the show that is kind of, like, mediocre and bland and unnecessary, but I don't know. They did take a different spin on Star Trek.
It's right. It's a little different. It's definitely it shows more promise than the pilot for Voyager. Like
right,
the story was interesting. It shared the problem. I think that one of the problems Voyager had is that there was not a real kind of thrust. There was no real thematic, philosophical thrust behind the pilot, whereas there was a little bit more of that. Certainly with Deep Space Nine, it was PTSD and coming to grips with this, that, and the other thing. But Voyager, interesting story, pretty well executed, but it didn't make you really think about humanity at all. The main humanity kind of... There were multiple messages, and they were all nice. They just didn't add up to like a single thing. In Voyager. Mm-hmm. Enterprise had it a little bit, but it at least had that more like exploration, and it was kind of driving home the whole like humans are going to take risks and go out there, and they want to have adventures and be explorers.
And it's like the humans are sort of proving themselves to the Vulcans at that stage. Yeah. And the other pilots we talked about, the humans are defending humanity or trying to explain humanity to some sort of alien superpower. Powerful creature.
This is the first pilot where it's on Earth.
Yeah.
Well, there was definitely also more of a like a connection trying to be made between sort of like, I guess aspects of whatever we can relate to. Like, I mean, I don't know. Their uniform, for example, was more jumpsuity.
That was modeled after the actual U.S. Navy.
Okay.
They had consulted like the submarine. People, the submarine service.
Oh, so, I didn't.
That's why.
Submarine. I thought that was an insult at first.
No, like sort of submarine. So, like that's why those uniforms look super like U.S. Navy, like 1990s, 2000s. Like that's why.
And what's cool is I think Discovery does a good job of kind of showing a midway point between
You mean Enterprise?
No, Discovery. Oh. So there's the Enterprise uniforms, and then there's the Discovery uniforms, and then Discovery's like right at the end of that, and then they start phasing in the gold shirt, the mm-hmm. tunic style. But the Discovery uniforms are a lot more, like they're less jumpsuity and baggy and stuff, but they still have the flavor of Enterprise. They thought about it, And I think that it's helped by the fact that the Enterprise uniforms were pretty cool.
Mm. Also, they made them, which came off as a little bit clumsy at times, but they did try to make a point of like, we're not quite at the stage where we quite understand how to integrate with the concepts of the Federation.
There is no Federation.
There is no Federation. Yeah.
I think that happens like towards the end of the series or something.
Yeah. Okay. So not the Federation, but I guess that's the point then. Yeah. There is no Federation. So how they're trying to figure out how to integrate with like these aliens and. It just comes off, everyone comes off as really antagonistic, kind of like petty and hostile, like throughout the whole episode.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the humans and the Vulcans are button heads, and the Vulcans think they know everything about everything, and they think they know best for the humans, and the humans are being humans and button heads.
Humans are definitely being human.
But it's interesting because.
So buttons. So.
9/11 happened.
9/11. It's been a long road.
President W. Bush.
Getting from
That was something.
It's been a long road.
Dan, I want you to finish your point. But I do want to talk about the theme song.
In a finger song again, I'm up my bow.
I'm going to put me down.
But I'm not going to flip. I'm going to knock down the bank, man.
Because I got faith.
I didn't. Listen to the whole song.
So here's the thing.
I only did that once.
I think we've just segued into the theme song.
Yeah, this is much more important, actually.
The theme song, okay. At the time,
Isn't it like a Rod Stewart song?
It was originally, certainly Rod Stewart sang it in the past at some point. I think it was originally his song. There are two problems with the theme song. Problem number one, it's stupid.
Yeah, it's really
like
dumb.
It's just dumb.
It's so dumb
on the face of it, right? The idea to be all like that's the singer is good, the composition is good, but in context, it's dumb. And the second problem is that it's dumb, and then it gets dumber because when he's like it's been a long road, that's already dumb. Mm-hmm. But then when it gets to that weird little bridge thing, then that's even dumber. Like, it's like I'm already not enjoying this song. and it's grating and annoying. And then it does that tonal shift into the, like, you know, and you're just like, what? Now this is even stupider. I have to endure it. Like, this?
Yeah, they really went balls out with
that
it.
That kind of music was like big then. Like,
and I would probably, I can enjoy the
section of population.
Yeah. That song can be enjoyed separate to the Star Trek. And it, I think the third point that makes it aggravating is that take the song away and the opening credits are kind of awesome. Like the concept is awesome.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You know? No, that's another way they try to sort of relate it to like what we know is they show like space shuttle taking off and like they make it seem more sort of closer to what a reality that we kind of understand.
It was supposed to be a more accessible Star Trek.
Yeah. Right.
And that, I think that was part of their choice. Part of that was their choice in the music and having like this stupid ballad business instead of like a symphony playing, you know, like triumphant space.
I'm gonna look
music.
Up the Dawson's Creek lyrics for the opening song because there's a few couple weird.
It would have been better with some Dawson's Creek music. So they're gonna go all 90s.
Do you remember by the third season there was a point where they basically took that song. I don't even know if they sped it up or if they just added they double timed the drum beat because before it was like a classic like drum beat that was like doom ching doom ch, but then it turned into like. It's been I've got pinch in the hunch. No more to no pinch.
Isn't that like the Amen Corner? What do they call that?
Anything.
What?
Wow, I missed out on all of this.
Well, they did that with Deep Space Nine. Remember, we're in Deep Space Nine in season 4, I think. They just like added all sorts of like all sorts of extra instrumentation underneath.
There's another part of that song, the Enterprise song, though, that reminds me of extra instrumentation. I can't remember if it was in the opening. I think it was in the end part. Around the same time they pepped it up, they added a little badass little guitar lift. A lick.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Into my heart. I've got fate. Something, you know.
Well, and I remember at the time that people were already laughing at the opening song and then also aggravated because the closing credit music is good. It's the same song, but it's just an orchestral version.
Right. Now,
the one they ended up using was a pepped up version of that, like a, you know, it more orchestra, more instruments and things, more complex and layered, but it's a good
theme. Well, I think the end theme actually was they made it more a little more Star Trek-y. They had like horns and shit.
Yeah, Star Trek loves bassoons.
Yeah, so stuff. I think they couldn't resist but doing that in the end one. It was interesting. I can't remember what it was. I was watching some kind of Star Trek documentary or something, but they were talking about
some kind of Star Trek.
You're all on
some sort of Star Trek.
Some kind of. But they were saying that at the end of like it became like a running gag that at these like Star Trek conventions, like people would be at the bar, at the hotel bar, drinking, and everyone was drunk at like last call, and they'd all start singing that song.
I may have done that at some point.
Yeah, it seems like such an appropriate thing to do, though, right? Like,
well, for
like a drunk anthem to sing at the end of a Star Trek convention, so it works. It succeeds on that level because it's fun to like be silly about that.
You know? And it's interesting because it's certainly you and I, and to a degree, Jesse. I mean, it's kind of the first Star Trek where we could drink legally.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
We could be in a bar and drink and do that. Yeah. And, it, you know, it is kind of, do you remember
I was smoking weed.
Yeah, well, that too. But you can, you just did that whenever.
You
then.
Can do anything.
But do you remember those old commercials for Errol's Internet?
And Errol's?
They went, Errol's Internet.
And
they were so aggravating, but they worked because you remembered them and you were just pissed off that
Errol's
it existed.
Internet. That reminds me of Phlox, actually, because he did a few of those things, like something B.
Notes say, my note here is Phlox is like Neelix, but not awful.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. He has like some Neelix features about his face, but he's not like a horrible monster.
Yeah, I know. He just keeps horrible monsters in his leeches and other weird shit.
Right.
So was this show? This show had like definitely a more sort of cinematic vibe. They changed the whole vibe of the show. Now it's
first one to be shot in widescreen HD.
Okay, I had a few questions about stuff like that. Now, in terms of when they talk about single camera and multi camera, Star Trek was always a single camera style show. Yes.
All that means is like a multi cam sitcom is where they have usually three, maybe more. set up cameras, and then they film everything at the same time,
right?
And then edit the different feeds together. That's the basic concept.
And I was always thinking, like, single camera must be kind of a generic term because they must use a couple cameras every now and then.
Yeah, but
the idea is that it's not like it works for sitcom because you can give different sort of perspectives and change it up on the fly.
And it's quicker.
Yeah.
In the olden days in particular, single camera is way more complicated because all the lighting, all the setting up, everything has to be done for that particular camera. You're right. It's maybe they do have a couple other side cameras or whatever, but really it's all being lit for we are shooting this angle from this perspective for this amount of time. The lighting has to be this, the background, etc.
When I sort of found out like about that kind of concept, I was like thinking like, wow, acting for like shows and movies with that, it must be kind of disconcerting. You must feel it's like kind of like disjointed and separated from the action sometimes. Yeah. I mean, the classic example, which this is beyond that. This is something completely different. But I remember the time you're talking about The Hobbit. This is totally off subject. But like Ian McKellen being off in another room, like by himself, like doing special effects, and he was
crying.
Yeah, because he felt separate. But to an extent, not to the same degree, but to an extent, that's what single camera must be kind of like too, because you have to like just do these scenes out of context and shit.
Well,
like
my understanding is that's one of the judgments of an actor is if you're. You'll like an actor colleague better if they're the kind of person who sticks around and will read the lines, and take turns. And,
interesting.
As opposed to somebody who's like, fuck it, I'm back to my trailer, and then has a PA, has a production assistant read the lines because you're filming that angle.
Right.
You know?
So they were all single cameras. So the question, you had just mentioned it, because it's got that, what gives it that different fucking feel to it? Feel.
It was filmed in widescreen and projected in HD. I said filmed in HD. I don't believe that to be the case. I think it was still filmed on film at that stage, but it was processed in HD. I could be wrong, or maybe they switched to HD cameras, but I don't think so.
They switched in like the fourth season or the third season.
Oh, did they?
To HD?
I have it in my notes.
Whoa, how do you have that in your fucking notes?
Because I did some research.
That's badass.
Looks this shit up.
I didn't even think about that.
But that
timing
makes sense.
I told you I was going to bring my game.
Because all the original, when they started doing the HD format shows in that era, they were all shot on film at first, but you know, then broadcast in HD. But eventually the HD cameras came close enough to do the work.
Now, did they have ceilings in this show? Because I remember this being a thing you were talking about.
Yeah. No, it's TOS.
Fourth season. First three seasons were film, and the fourth season was digital.
Word up. Thanks for confirming that.
And it was at Paramount Pictures.
Yeah. But they had ceilings, and you can see it's very cramped, and they did a good job with the technology looking more cramped and inconvenient and sort of, you know, primitive, for lack of a better term.
The first opening shot of this show is basically Archer as a kid.
The flashback with his dad.
The flashback with his dad. And it's kind of... I'm trying to remember the timeline of this because, like, I think it was... So there was the flashback with his dad, and then when the show actually starts after that, it's like 30 years later after that scene.
Yeah.
And so... But they're talking about, like, the Vulcan still... So I had it somewhere in here, but I couldn't remember how long after... First contact, that opening scene took, I think...
21-21, is that scene.
21-21 is that scene. Do we remember when first contact was?
Contact is like 90 years prior.
Yeah, something like that. Because the implication was that Zefram Cochran was long dead, but that he was alive when, you know, back in the day when Archer's dad was doing his work.
Or actually, it wasn't... No, the show is 9 decades after First Contact. The flashback wasn't 9 decades after. That was like...
The flashback.
6 decades.
Oh, the flashback as a kid.
Yeah.
Was nine... Oh, wait, I think actually, wait,
the,
I think...
The flashback was not nine
decades. Yeah, 9 decades, right.
But the flashback was 21-21.
So, okay, so yeah, so actually, yeah, right. So the opening scene happened... 30 years later was when the show took place.
Yeah.
The opening scene, First Contact, had happened 60 years prior to the opening scene.
Right, yeah, 60, yeah.
Yeah. So, So,
Miss.
What did you like the flashback thing? What did you feel about it? How was your reaction?
I mean, I guess, I don't know if it was...
You felt it was a little cheesy, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean...
A little bit.
I felt it was cheesy, but I was nevertheless affected by the closing... The, you know, because it starts with Archer's with his dad. They're building they're building a model.
Right.
And they're enjoying it and they're bonding. And then later in the show, there's the flashback to where he's having trouble. He's encountering a difficulty and he's having trouble. And I'm like, he's a little on the nose.
Yeah, right.
And then it ends with him like flying it real well into the sunset. And I got to say, this is super cheesy, but it did kind of make me be all like, oh.
See, that's the thing. There were cheesy aspects, but I don't really necessarily mind cheesiness or corniness.
Nah,
if it's done in an appropriate way, like certain, sometimes it pisses me off. So like, for example, the movie, The Patriot, Mel Gibson's movie, The Patriot.
With Rene Auberjonois is in there.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's right. Motherfucker.
Yeah.
You're
Odo. Right. Yeah, Odo up in that shit.
Oh no, it's Odo. Yeah, that movie was like purposely being corny and trying to make you cry. That was the whole purpose of that movie, was to try to make you cry. And it pissed me off. I felt it was exploitative. But I didn't feel like this cheesiness or corniness was exploitative. It was kind of silly, but like,
it was a little
like
silly.
I don't have really much of an opinion either way on the flashback. But that's interesting that you talk about it. It does show a progression. Don't know what the point is exactly, because I guess there is the whole like, yeah, there's this scene where they're flying the model and he like doesn't do a good landing at first,
yeah,
and his dad's like, you can't be scared of the wind, son. And it's like, okay. Yeah. And then at the end, like, what's his name?
There's no wind in space.
Yeah, well, at the end he's like, oh, there's an ion storm, sir, should we go around? And he's like, we can't be afraid of a little bit of wind, you know. And it's like, well, it's an ion storm. It's not really the same as wind. I get
I
what you're saying.
The same thing. That sounds like some pretty serious shit.
Yeah, right.
It's the same thing like when Mayweather was saying, like, my dad always kept it at a 0.8 G. And I was like, that's some irresponsible shit.
I know, right?
Like, why the fuck would you do that?
I was thinking in my head, like, if you could that casually fuck with gravity, I might just make it a little heavier just so I could like passively get stronger.
Yeah, you know? get some beefy bones,
beefy
man.
Beefy bones. But it's like,
why make some t-shirts that just say beefy bones.
Beefy bones Jones.
Beefy bones.
But I don't know why you wouldn't just
like
fly around that shit. In The Expanse.
Well, see, in The Expanse, it's great because they don't have a choice, you know?
That's the key point there, is having the choice. Like, why would you choose to go through?
And it's a problem in The Expanse. The people who are raised on Ceres or, you know, in the asteroid belt, they can't go to Earth without it being constant torture. You know, even the Martians have to take drugs just to like kind of get by on the Earth, and they start fucking vomiting when they see the fucking sky.
And they don't like to go outside.
They look at the sky and they just start puking because they can't handle like the fucking horizon.
Yeah.
You know?
So in that opening scene, I thought it was another part of the opening scene that came up later is it was kind of a little passing thing. I noticed that so back in that opening scene, they were talking about the. First of all, you know, John Archer, racism, of course, is heavily dealt with in the show because, like, you know, Archer is being blatantly, like, racist about Vulcans or whatever. Yeah. And he's like, they won't even give us Warp 5, blah, blah, blah. Why won't they give us Warp 5, Daddy? Daddy.
One Warp 5. You pay
your 5, Daddy.
Please, sir, may I have some more Warp?
No question, it's a Warp 5, please, Daddy.
Okay. I know you're not doing an Asian accent.
No, I'm not.
But it was getting very close.
Oh, man, my bad. I was really not going for that.
We're not allowed to do that yet. We're working on that. We're working on doing the non-racist Asian accent. One day. But
one day.
We're not there yet.
But we're not allowed to even want to yet, though, at this point.
We're allowed to secretly want to.
Okay.
As long as it comes from a good place.
All right.
All right.
Can still do a southern accent, though, right?
Apparently, for some reason, to me, it's more offensive.
Yeah, I know. I'm starting to feel actually bad about doing that.
And because I don't mean it with any sort of sadness or hate or whatever. But
it's kind of just a fun accent to do.
It is. Well, that's my whole argument. With like the Asian accent,
yeah,
is it's not meant to be mocking. It's you learn about a culture by experiencing their cadence and their vowel structures,
mama,
and how you have to change
mama,
your voice. And you get that with any accent. Doing any accent, you get to inhabit somebody. Speaking of accents, the Trip Tucker guy.
Oh,
is that his real accent, or was he putting on an accent?
That's a strange accent. Middle America accent.
He's supposed to be from Texas, right?
Florida.
Oh, he's from Florida?
Is he Florida?
Yeah.
Why did I assume he was from Texas? I don't know.
But I do know that later Florida gets zapped by the Zindi, you know? And
the Zindi.
That's when the third season they have this sort of right wing third season.
Right. So that's what I was originally gonna when I was talking about when we got tracked to the more important opening
the tragedy
theme song
of September 11th, 2001.
So the third scene was like that was directly affected by
season. They decided to do a terrorism analogy, and the problem was is it got really not Star Trek-y for a bit, and then they course corrected.
They already had someone called the Sula Band, you know, which was
that quote, was a coincidence.
Whoa, shit! Which was quote unquote in the show. It was a coincidence, but in the quote unquote the show, it was referred to as an enclave. It was also referred to as a cabal. Well, like it had all these names.
I want to back up. It wasn't a coincidence that it sounded like Taliban. My understanding is they did mean it to sound like Taliban, but it was. The name was developed pre September 11th, so they meant it to be the Taliban in the sense that they were the people destroying the Buddhist sculptures, not the people housing Osama bin Laden.
So in the opening scene, they were talking about the Vulcans won't give us warp five, and then like notice when it cuts to the modern day Enterprise or whatever. First of all, that opening shot. That was fucking weird when it shows it's supposed to be Archer and Tucker. We were talking about Trip Tucker. Yeah. They're on that weird like escape pod looking thing. It wasn't an escape pod, but it was a little
shuttle pod,
a little space skiff going through. If you look at the scene, it straight up looks like Archer is like moving around in there when there's the shot from the distance. But he looks like he's sitting next to a crash test dummy. And it looks like his skin is a different color, too. I swear, just watch that scene over.
Oh, man, I got to go back and
watch that scene over. I watched it like four times, and I swear to God, like, Archer moving around from the distance looked fairly normal, but, like, the other guy, Trucker, wasn't moving. He looked
like
a crash
test dummy. And
the
other dude, he all, like, bumps into shit, and then, like, throughout that whole episode, it's like, this guy kind of isn't the greatest pilot, and he's always, like, bumping into
stuff. Oh, yeah, right, that's right.
Like, they're flying through that gas giant, he does some kind of thing where he bumps around.
Right,
the other guy gives him a look.
Yeah, and he's just kind of like, well, I don't know.
Because the actual, like, pilot of the ship is like, let me be the pilot. And like,
he's like, no. Yeah, he's like, all due respect, I can do this. And he's like, well, I can do it. No, it's right here.
It's right here. I'm a compassionate conservative.
Yeah. But, and he also, there's that gag where he, like, later on, way later on in the series, there's an episode where they go to that space station that's run by robots, and it's like they basically get food, replicated food. They basically, their ship is fucked up. They find this place. They have to make a fair trade, and these robots fix their ship. But then there's this whole sort of controversy.
Oh yeah, that episode is weird.
Yeah, it is a weird episode. And when they were fixing the ship, one of the fixes, they noticed there was scratched paint on the hull. And like,
oh, was
and
that like, a callback?
I'm thinking it might have been. Archer was like, I thought I told you to fix that. And Tucker, you delivered the line great. I think the actor's pretty good, actually. He's like, I was getting around to it. And it was awesome. But like, that might have been a callback because he scratched it like in the first episode, in this episode. Like he bumped the outside of the ship on there. He's like, remember to fix that later or something like that. Yeah.
I think one thing that Enterprise really has going for it is the majority of the acting is really great. I mean, Scott Bakula is just fantastic.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
And Trip Tucker, as you said, was great.
And I don't know who plays Hoshi, but she some of her lines she are like some.
Oh,
of,
she's yeah.
She like the way she delivers some of her lines, like the scene when she's talking to Klang, like who's played by Zeus the Moose, aka Debo, aka president of like of Earth in Fifth Element or whatever, like or whatever. Like she's talking to him, and like that whole like interaction's pretty good. She's like, I don't know. Like, so what was that?
That was one of his few lines.
Oh, in Fifth Element.
Fifth Element.
Okay, yeah.
So Hoshi's good.
Yeah, she did some of the lines, like the delivery of some of those lines are really good. And Jolene, I wish I feel bad. I can't
Blaylock?
Remember.
Is it Blaylock? I think
it's
Blaylock.
Yeah, it's Blaylock. I can't remember. Made me feel bad that I don't remember Hoshi's, the actress played Hoshi. But Blaylock, she like has some good expressions when she delivers some of her lines. Like she makes these like, you know, subtle reactions and stuff like that. So
I think she's one of the better. I think they did so like I was saying last week for Voyager, Tim Russ does an amazing Vulcan. It's you know, because a lot of the guest star Vulcans just don't get it or are not quite there. But Tim Russ did a really great job. I think Jolene Blaylock also does a really great job. She conveys that whole like Vulcan assholiness, but those hints of emotion or annoyance that, because that's the real idea with Vulcans. It's not that they don't have emotion, it's that they've quote unquote mastered and suppressed it and controlled it. But like, you know, kind of the joke is like, it's still, It's still in there. They work it in, you know.
I felt like the theme of the TOS was kind of like, you know, like the whole emotion shaming kind of thing. But this was more just like calling out emotions. Like, ah, you did it again. Yeah. You showed some emotion. Oh, concern? That's an emotion. Well, it's like, no, well, concern's not... I mean, it can be an emotion, but concern is emotion like, I don't know... Caring about others is an emotion. There is a self-interest involved with concern and caring about others, you know. So it's like, it's some of the things is like, but it's always this trying to, there's always this trying to be this gotcha moment. It's, haha, I found the Vulcan emotion. That's kind of like
Linda Park.
Yeah, I was
Linda
about to
Park.
Say Linda Park.
Linda
yeah,
Park.
Really good.
Thank you. Okay, to finish the thought though, that
she
I was getting
born the same year that I was born.
No shit. Isn't that weird when you see these actors and you're like, man.
Man, I could have been something.
I could have been.
I could have done something with my life. Now I'm on a podcast.
That was 20 years ago.
Hey, I could have done something with my life.
What would you have done? What?
I could have.
You could have finished the fucking sentence.
God damn. Shit. I could have been on a starship. I could have designed a mural on a starship.
A starship?
Wait, a mural?
Designed a mural on a starship.
Does it go on the inside or the outside? Is it like racing stripes on the side?
It's
are you the guy who,
mural?
You're the guy who paints the sideways Star Trek logo with like the red stripes shooting out the side to make it look all cool, like the ship is extra fast.
Yeah, I do perspective tricks. So when you look at it from a 45-degree angle,
it
you think you're
like
looking at sideways.
It looks like a couple...
That looks like a sideways.
That's a sideways. We don't fuck with that. That's a sideways ship. You don't know, though. You don't know.
Looks like it's going that other way.
It's going that other way.
Jesus Christ. Okay, Enterprise.
See, that wasn't a southern accent, though.
No, that's right. That you insulted a different part of the
country. Sort of a monster accent.
Hey.
Well, but with the point I was okay.
What wait, was, you had a, there's making, a point somewhere in there.
4 point. They were saying five. They don't.
1.21 gigawatts.
Marty.
It's gigawatt.
Marty. 1.21 gigawatts.
What was I thinking?
Hey.
A bolt of lightning.
Why don't they just make the paint invisible? Then you don't see it. So, nanotechnology in the paint. Fuck. There you go. So the opening scene they were talking about.
I heard tell about something called a point. They were round a ways back.
Round ways back there.
There's a point.
For the five, okay, they won't even get daddy, they won't give us warp five, daddy. And he's like, I know, son, I don't understand either. Fast forward, and they're talking about the Enterprise. She can do warp 4.5. So 30 years later...
They went out to Neptune and back, and it was like 6 minutes or something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, precisely. Neptune and back in 6 minutes. That's what they said. And so the point being...
That's pretty far.
So the point being is in the opening scene, keep saying Klingons, the Vulcans didn't give them warp 5. 30 years later, they still didn't give them warp 5. They were still only up to 4.5. So Vulcans...
Yeah.
So like... They, I don't know. They just never gave them warp 5. And they were 30 years. They strung them along. Like,
they made them figure it out themselves.
Fuck those guys.
Yeah, that's the main thing. That's the other thing I kind of like was wondering though is like they were always bitching about like the Vulcans not giving them shit and withholding shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something about like, yeah, man, that's part of like what the Prime Directive's all about. You gotta figure that shit out yourself.
And part of what's interesting about Enterprise is. And it's tricky, and I think the writers were not always successful, is they are trying to put you in the world where it's like, this is pre-Federation, pre-figuring out. We're going to figure out the Prime Directive. We're going to figure out that we need to work together. The Vulcans are going to figure out, just like the humans, that it's better to be together to face these threats. We're going to figure that out. However, because it's a prequel and because we already have the concepts from the later series and the later timeframes in mind, it kind of makes the people we're supposed to be rooting for look like either assholes or morons.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not. It's just that they haven't figured that shit out yet because they haven't had the experiences necessary to come to the conclusions that we take for granted when it comes to TOS, TNG, etc.
Yeah, but now it's always easy to look from the outside of a show. It's like when
it is very easy.
It's very easy to watch a show we're from literally an outside just, perspective.
We're just
it's
sitting
like
around
it's
talking
like you're
about
outside of the TV and you're looking at
I'm
it.
I'm looking at so actually arguably a lot harder to be inside and watch the show. But
I'm inside the show.
It's not enough room in there. You can't fit.
It's so cramped.
It's 2D.
Your TV is too small.
The TV screen is
it's very small.
Especially if it's a flat screen.
Oh my god, new technology is killing us, man.
I got a chef.
Where are my CRTs? So yeah, but well sometimes it's kind of hard to believe what I was trying to say is for example, Trip Tucker goes on that planet and he sees that mom like starving her kid of air. Remember that scene?
That was a poorly put. That scene didn't make any sense.
It didn't make any sense because
it looked like Trip was a piece of shit.
It did. Yeah. It looked like he looked like a fucking asshole, total piece of shit. And I don't care.
It was an opportunity for the Vulcans to be like, you don't know nothing, man.
Yeah. The Vulcans
would
be fucking
stupid.
Be fucking smug the whole time, and that's what the Vulcans felt like a lot of that episode, especially
the Vulcans were basically neener.
Neener.
So you don't have to understand someone else's culture, but you don't just go down to a planet and start telling everybody to how to fucking treat their kids and shit. It's making just be like, I don't get it, but nobody else is freaking out, so it's probably
the point they were trying to make was very clear. It just wasn't done right because what it looked like was that Trip was for some bizarre reason. While somebody was talking to him and shit, he kept looking over at what looked to be a poor, very nice mom.
Right.
Dealing with her child who clearly had some sort of issue. They were aliens. I mean, nothing looked weird about the situation other than the child did look like he was in distress, but a whole bunch of other motherfuckers on that space station looked like they're in distress. I suggest this is the kind of thing that Rick and Morty, a more modern show, would do much better because they would do it more extreme. Like, they'd have the mom, stabbing the kid in the head, and then Trip would be like, what the hell are you doing? And they'd be like, oh, no, I'm scooping out the maggots that are this is normal for our species, you piece of shit.
Yeah, and you have to go more would be grosser and weirder.
Yeah, and they did not go, they didn't go extreme enough.
No, that's a good point. That's
If the woman was just, beating the shit out of the kid, beating the fuck out of that kid, and then it turned out that kid needs, kinetic energy to grow,
right
that would have made more sense because Trip would have looked like he was in the right, but we would as an audience would agree with him, and also as an audience would learn the lesson alongside him of we shouldn't make assumptions,
as
which
opposed
is the
to
lesson.
some worried looking mother trying to be like it's okay like weaning her kid.
The mother looked like she kept glancing at Trip like he was gonna rape her
So
that was one minor thing in a largely, I think, pretty well produced episode.
Yeah, I mean, and Archer, they did try to do the point with Archer too. It was a little better done in general of him not understanding all this stuff and why are people acting this way? He was really standoffish. And then I felt T'Pol was she was really petty and she was really smug though is the thing, and so I thought it was a little much because Vulcans I know are supposed to be kind of smug a little bit, right? But she was just fucking petty. When Hoshi was basically when she was giving Hoshi shit,
Hoshi, would you like some shit?
Yeah, she basically, would you like to go back to your room and eat some shit, is what she said to her. Because Hoshi was like, did you hear that? That's some fucked up shit. And she's like, maybe you want to go back to your room and blah, blah, blah. And then Hoshi talked some shit to her in Vulcan, and then she responded with, I was instructed to speak in English. I expect you to respect my blah, 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 blah. She was pulling that catty bullshit. Catty, I'm sorry, catty, there's an implication to saying catty. I didn't mean it like that, but, you know.
Asshole-ish. Asshole of a bitch.
But, a little iffy.
Yeah, and then what was it? The scene where it was her and Trip, and they were trying to see some shit in the gas giant or something, and the tools didn't get a fine enough resolution. They had a scanner.
Oh yeah, Vulcan children play with more complicated toys.
Yeah, right.
Fuck off with your toys.
It's what the fuck?
That's some fucked up shit to say, man.
Thanks. And it's also, come on. I mean, maybe it's true, but come on.
It's just not necessary. Like, why is she? What is she trying to prove? What logic is that?
How long have the Vulcans been in space? Have they been in space for centuries? Like prior to?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Romulans split off thousands of years before.
That was way back. Yeah.
So, but I don't know how much of that time the Vulcans actually were spacefaring, or how good they were. They may not have had warp technology at that point. I don't know.
Yeah. What's the distance between Romulus and?
But like I was saying about the whole Enterprise thing, like with the trip thing is a good example, but you're meant to go along and learn these lessons, and I think they do a pretty good job overall, but it is a little bit awkward given that we are expecting a different status quo. Mm-hmm. Not expecting, we know it's a prequel, but you know what I mean, like we're just used to a certain context.
You're used to for most of Star Trek, people think of the Vulcans, they think of Spock, and Spock is this dude that he's everybody's buddy. He's already part of the team. He's like this guy, and he's weird, and he's an alien, and he's a Vulcan, and Vulcans are into this stuff, but like he's still like the captain's buddy. Like that's when as far as the actual series with Kirk goes, not the Cage, but like, you know.
Yeah.
When you first see him, he's being all friendly with the captain. You know, he's already saying, yeah, I'm kind of part human already. Like,
right. They don't kind of make him more, like, emotionless until later. I mean, there's the already implication. Is
there's, like, some development that goes on later, and there's all this sort of back and forth between him and McCoy.
It's tricky because in order to give Vulcan's personality without emotions, that's probably a really difficult task. I mean, and so you, and everyone looks at Spock as like, well, Vulcans must all be like Spock because they're like that. You know, I don't look at a Klingon and say all Klingons must be like war for this one or that one. Right. All Ferengi don't have to be like Quark or whatever like that. But you look, when I look at Vulcan, Quark,
even though that guy played most of the Ferengi.
Yeah, right.
Well, and plus Spock is half human. I mean, so that's the other thing is he was never intended to be a full Vulcan. He identified as a full Vulcan.
I felt T'Pol was like I said it before, but she was just like really hostile. Okay, there was one scene. So like they're back in that same scene where they were looking at the resolution shit. Tucker's all like, "How about this?" And she goes, "It's just background noise. Your sensors aren't capable of isolating plasma decay." It's like that motherfucking kid in school who you're like, "Hey, check out this calculator." He's like, "Oh, that's nothing. I got a much better calculator at home. I can play video games on it." But that's not even that stupid. Yeah, I got a TI-80, so it's just kind of like, she just came off as a little, and I guess that was the point, though, she didn't want to be there, but once again, point being, as related to that, is that, like, yeah, I guess it's hard to sort of make an individual Vulcan, and so without personality, which is the other trick of Star Trek, about how we were talking before, about how Gene Roddenberry didn't want conflict among, like, the staff, the crew, so it must be really hard to write one when there's this wasn't the case in Enterprise,
drama is conflict.
It's literally conflict.
The definition.
And conflict is generally caused usually by emotion, right? Yeah. So, not always, I guess, but generally, so if you have a race of a species, or whatever you call them, aliens.
Some sort of human something or other causes conflict.
Yeah. And so there's the conflict among the crew, so there's that, but then also then you have Vulcans, it's like, how do you create individualistic characters when they're not supposed to have emotions? So they gotta give them some personality. It seems like the best personality they can really give Vulcans in general is smugness. Just smug and like just like talking
it's
down to people.
Yeah. Well, and I do think that they did a better job with T'Pol. Plus, it was
I did really like the
character overall. And it was you know, there was more nuance to it than the average guest Vulcan, which is usually just like an asshole.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree, and I think a lot of her reactions, like I was saying before, were great. I thought it was
And we're gonna really don't worry, everybody. We will get to the decontamination.
Oh God, I was thinking about that. It is the most ridiculous scene in all of Star Trek. Well, I can't think of one that's more ridiculous.
I remember seeing it when it first came on the air, and I was just like, come on, Star Trek. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That was one of the things that was like, okay, I'm not going to be into this show.
It was weird, and it was extra. It's weird in Star Trek because it's not that Star Trek hasn't been sexy before, quote unquote. It has.
Yeah.
In fact, often.
Absolutely.
Sometimes in good ways, sometimes in problematic ways, but
Geordi.
And But and this Jordy. this was a sexy scene, but it was weird because they were trying to pretend it wasn't, and that made it uncomfortable.
Yeah,
because it was trying to be like, oh, this is not sexy.
It was like like
these are colleagues.
Like he was in her pants.
Yeah, like, there was a scene where he like had his hand on her butt crack. He was on her butt.
He put his hand
crack.
Down the front of
and
her
he
pants
went around the
too.
Front,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And
he had
rubbing
his little
her pointy ear.
And he had his little bulgy peen.
Yeah,
more like penis pucker.
That penis was that penis was all puckered out. Like
he's got a rad dong though.
yeah, he does have a pretty rad dong. And Bakula was doing all right too. And the next thing I was like, because Jamie and I were watching, and I was just like, here, Jamie, there's just like a ton of peen in here. Yeah, right. I got these nipples. You get Bacula peen and this like Trip Tucker peen, and I get to see some crazy ass boobs and nipples poking out.
I mean, it was funny because they began that scene actually, which is they kind of almost winked to themselves. They're like Tucker asks Floxy, goes, "Is this really necessary?" It's like it begins the scene because it's like
Floxy's like, "Oh yes,
yeah." He's awesome. He goes like, "I've loaded the appropriate decon gel into compartment B."
B. I think that they wanted to accomplish what I thought was, interestingly enough, accomplished much better in Starship Troopers, which was the concept of this is the future.
Yes,
these are enlightened people. They can do this as a work thing
right.
and have it not be sexual.
Right.
In Starship Troopers, they totally managed that 100%. In this, it's but you're rubbing each other.
It was
Star Trek. You got people having sex with androids and shit. Mm.
Yeah. So, and in Star Trek, like when the sexiness happens in general, it's like kind of like okay, even when it's weird. Like this was more ridiculous than Beverly Crusher having an orgasm. This was much more ridiculous.
Candle induced orgasm.
This was creepier than Geordi because like this was supposed to be like a normal down to business scene, and they sexualized it. And I get that some of life is sexual. It's some of like. Fantasy is sexualizing every. God, sorry.
Are you the fucking beaver from Lady and the Tramp?
I'm like that guy in Old West and Back to the Future 3.
You are the beaver from Lady and the Tramp.
I can't even do it when I'm trying.
Does anybody want some wood?
Anybody want some shrimp? Yeah. Okay, I'm not trying to do that. Look, I know part of fantasy is sexualizing. Let's see if I can get through this. Part of fantasy is sexualizing kind of everyday experiences. I get that that's a fantasy part, but in Star Trek, it doesn't work like that
exactly.
for me in Star Trek. That doesn't work.
It seemed like it was sort of weirdly... It was one of the things of like...
It was creepster.
The spirit of the time in which that show came out. Like that was one of the negatives for me. It was like
I agree.
It reminded me
that and the theme song.
It reminded me, even though it seemed consensual, it reminded me of Molestation for some reason.
Yeah. Okay. So here's my two cents on that. Right?
And actually, wait, she does. But real quick, she does actually push his hand away when he starts massaging her ears. She's like, okay, that's
no. But he's fine with her massaging like her tits
and her butt crack
and her butt.
Yeah.
And her front
piece.
I
don't think Vulcans care about that stuff.
Yeah, man. They pretend not to. But so is in filmic.
Do the chicks have the pon far too, or just the dudes?
Oh,
that's a good question. Huh. I don't know.
Yeah. Nobody knows.
It's all or nothing, though.
We're gonna find out
who's the Vulcan.
You're gonna learn today.
You're gonna learn about Pon Farr.
Today.
How am I gonna learn about Pon
Farr? How am I gonna learn about Pon Farr from you, motherfuckers?
In film terms, there's a phrase you may have heard called the male gaze, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, it's used in other
gaze gaze. Yes.
And yes.
I mean, it dates.
No. You're right. To clarify.
Yeah.
M-A-L-E.
It dates back. I mean, it dates back to like paintings.
Yeah. It's not just film. No. I'm going to use it here applied to film. It can be in text as well. And, you know, but it's the perspective, the male perspective, the creating the world creator is creating the world from the perspective of the male.
Opera.
And specifically.
It's all over opera.
Specifically in terms of centralizing things, centralizing violence, centralizing sex with women.
And the male is the actor, is the aggressor,
yes,
and the woman is like.
But the way to think about it is the male gaze. You can have an example of the male gaze with not a single person in the scene. It can be the way it looks at a fucking pear.
Mm-hmm.
It's how it's directed. It's how it's lit. How the angles are. the editing, the pace of the editing, and a really, really cool recent example that people use to illustrate this is you look at Wonder Woman from the movie Wonder Woman, directed by a woman, mm-hmm. and then you take a nearly identical scene of her doing her hero pose thing, but from Zack Snyder directing it, right? Mm-hmm. And you can see the difference in how the body, the female body is conveyed, how it's dressed, how what angle the camera is, the postures, and the male camera likes, you know, a low down angle looking up.
Looking up at the butt crack and stuff like that.
Alternatively, a high up camera angle looking down, lording over, slow editing. And that scene, if they had filmed that scene brightly lit, regular editing, like a normal conversation, as opposed to that slow and sensual camera slowly panning across the bodies and then jump cut to going up the bodies.
Because
how many
excuses do we really need to make for a scene? It's like, oh, well, it was dimly lit because in the environment to make them not sick, it had to, you know, it's like that isn't explicitly said, but the point being is like you can argue away any kind of reason for why they had it, some made up reason. It's like, oh, the lighting was here because it was meant to be like this, and it was doing this because it was meant to show. You can make up excuses, but how many fucking excuses do you have to make for a scene to like make it not like rapey, you know? Anyway, I'm sorry,
those two get together later on, right?
They do.
That probably wasn't established at
here's
that
the
point.
Deal though
right,
might yeah. have been though, because there was weird sexual tension with them from the start.
Yeah,
anyway,
I'm sure they had that plan. Yeah. But
he's a nice looking dude.
What he makes is that scene extra really frustrating is. That scene is fucked up and it's weird hot. Because it's the goal of the scene is to say mature, progressive culture that can do this without sexualizing it, and then it proceeds to sexualize it through the male gaze, right?
Yeah.
But what's particularly frustrating, kind of like with the song, is they have another example in the show where they do it properly, which is they have that crazy ass alien strip club with the butterfly.
Oh, that was awesome.
Girls.
Those were the Coors Light.
Yeah,
that's what I read.
Really?
I read they were from Coors Light commercials. They were the some like model chicks.
No kidding.
Coors Light girls.
That makes sense.
They used them in that. Yeah.
That makes sense. They had to be from something because whatever they were doing, they did it like and not like in a creepy weird way. It's like whatever kind of image and message they were trying to convey. Like I was into it. Like some women, like strangely, differently colored alien women, scantily clad, eating bugs and dancing.
Like, yeah, and what is it like? That was Rigel. Like Rigel is always the place where there's like
always
some
Rigel
rainbow colored chicks.
Rigel,
they're all gonna jump on your jank.
The thing about that scene was a sexualized scene, and you could certainly argue whether it was correct or not to show that. But it contextually made sense. It was a scene that was intended to be sexual. It was intended to show the character of this particular planet, of this particular establishment, to convey, instantly convey character traits of the people hanging out in that type of place.
Right, exactly, and that was what I meant. It totally worked in that scene.
Exactly, done properly.
Yeah.
So they couldn't split the other one. They tried to have it both ways. They wanted the non-sexual situation, and they presented it sexually, as opposed to picking one or the other. Mm-hmm. It would have been fine. It would have been better if they had some sort of weird sexual tension, like for real thing, and that was the goal of the scene with Trip and T'Pol.
If it was already established that
it would be like
kind
ooh
of interest, yeah.
But they didn't. Exactly. They were trying to say this is their cool professionals, and by the way, look at her nipples.
Because then there would have been like, oh, they feel awkward about this. There would have been more to it.
Exactly.
Right, and instead it turned out to be some weird fetishized kind of fantasy kind of weirdness where I don't know.
Yeah,
but
it's like, well, you've been looking at this Vulcan chick for the whole show, so now you're gonna see this.
I watched
Vulcan
you wash them.
neither of you guys have played this game, but
about Runestone?
No, I wasn't
Doorknob?
Talking about,
are you talking about Doorknob?
No, I was talking about the whole Rigel thing reminded me of this game Mass Effect. Like everything about like this, if you ever played Mass Effect or ever saw scenes from it, like it just this probably came out before Mass Effect did. I'm pretty sure it did, but I don't know. The whole Rigel stuff, I was really into that whole bar scene just because the whole vibe of that whole bar was just, it was just bizarre enough, but also like interesting and visually stimulating, just like everything about that whole scene.
It was
like
a grittiness that they had not accomplished since Deep Space Nine.
The grittiness.
Right, exactly.
It was like an evolution of that. Voyager kind of somehow couldn't couldn't figure that out exactly.
It was Voyager was so sterile.
It's like there was no grid in the Delta Quadrant.
That's the slogan of the Delta Quadrant.
No grit.
There's no grit just in the Borg. Delta Quadrant. I was looking at, well, this isn't really important. First release, Mass Effect was 2007. So this was, Mass Effect was way after this. And that's interesting because that immediately reminded me of that game. They probably drew something. But I'm guessing that probably drew from something else, though. There's probably Blade Runner in it or something. I don't know. Who knows about, like, because I'm wondering where Enterprise got the idea. Because even though you didn't get to see Rigel that much, I thought the effort they put into like giving a good vibe there was pretty rad. But rad
word, rad-ables. And it's a Rigel you haven't heard about yet. It was like Rigel 10.
So wait, which is
Rigel 10?
Was Rigel the place they went to in TNG to get all sexed up and fun?
Yeah, that was the place where the green
that's
chicks
Risa.
Lived.
Risa.
Oh, Risa was TNG. Risa. Yeah, Rigel was more in TOS.
Okay, that because I remember hearing...
The green chick was from...
Okay, right.
In the cage, there's that Rigel. They had just been to Rigel.
Right.
And there was all that stuff that had happened at Rigel. And like, there's the green... And you see the first glimpse of the green chicks.
First glimpse of the green chicks.
Can you really think of a scene that's more ridiculous? Like, I know, I mean, there's a lot to, that's a long discussion, which are the most ridiculous scenes in Star Trek, but that scene, I can't think of anything that's just so more, like, creepy, like, out of place, weird, just kind of like, what the fuck?
That was,
you know,
really,
not
like,
in a good kind of
my
way.
The main thing that I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to watch this show anymore. That's ridiculous.
Right.
Like, come on.
But just like Star Trek. Opening theme song, it's, like, one of the most memorable things about it as being of just, like, what the fuck happened? How did this make it into the episode, you know? Like, kind of, like, deals, like...
It's supposed to be the accessible Star Trek, so there's, like, you know... There's stuff for everybody.
Accessible, like that farmer had that weird energy shotgun thing. Did you see that? Remember that?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I was talking about that.
That was weird.
It looked like a shotgun. I was like, "What the fuck was that?" And he totally blasted that Klingon. And later they say it's like a plasma rifle.
It's like some super future shotgun.
But it looked like a double barrel, like loaded like
it
a shotgun,
like a
motherfucker.
Like a shotgun, but it was all shiny future style.
And it shot a blast.
And he's all like, "I'm gonna get you!" And the Klingon's like, "Bah bah 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 bah."
I'm gonna get you, girl.
Like, and the Klingon just like gets blasted, like he flies back on his back.
That was awesome. Yeah, he totally fucked him up with that thing.
Yeah, like he almost killed the Klingon with a plasma rifle.
Yeah, I was impressed that like...
Oklahoma.
They had some like hardcore fucking weapons back then.
That's what you don't fuck with Oklahoma.
Come sweeping down the plains, Oklahoma, where the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
A Klingon.
Is that a Klingon?
A Klingon.
Klingoff. You know they wanted to say a Klingoff, but Klingoff. Somebody was like, we cannot.
I know, it's like, no.
We cannot do that.
We're not going to be that accessible.
Oh, the introduction of Phlox is great. I love it. He's just like, is he going to die? He goes, not necessarily.
Yeah, that's right.
Like,
he's really great.
You're really...
John Billingsley is the actor, and he's a fantastic actor.
You're right, and...
Well, because the archer comes in, and he's like, I guess you know everybody. He's like, not everybody. And he goes right over to the Klingon.
Yeah.
So it's like weird. He actually knows everybody in the room except the Klingon.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're right. It's like, it is like somehow he's associated with Neelix. And it's weird because their character doesn't really have much in common except that they're kind of like putsy looking alien
dudes.
It's
because it fits
But I feel it too, though. I understand there's a connection.
The Neelix niche was the kind of goofy alien niche.
Right.
Other perspective. Other. Because Vulcan is an alien, right? But we know Vulcan, so that's not an other. We're comfortable as Star Trek fans. Right. We are comfortable. This is the new other weird alien that's going to offer the weird perspective, right? Sort of hints of Data, hints of Spock in the original because we didn't know what a Vulcan was. That kind of niche. And I think he's most closely associated with Neelix partly because of the how close the shows are together. They, you know, came one after the other. And also because there's just this... jovial vibe.
Jovial, right. Maybe that's what it is.
Sort of miscellaneous jovial alien type.
Yes. Miscellaneous.
What kind of alien?
I want to start a band called Miscellaneous Jovial Alien.
I guess they tell you who, like, Phlox is, but who the, like,
there was
fucking Neelix? Where the fuck did that guy come from?
There was a band we played with called Miscellaneous Seeds, like some rap group.
Well, you know, Phlox also had a purpose.
They had a song called Who Am I, FBI. It was cool.
Phlox is like a doctor. He's useful. He's not some charlatan.
And it's lying charlatan.
Oh,
and it's well, it's awesome though that like he looks like he's got a whole fucking room full of like fucking animals and shit. So
like
it looks like he looks like some guy who's all into like some like bullshit like holistic medicine or something.
Neelix is like a character from
I guess
like
I just alienated whoever's into holistic medicine, but he looks like he's into some bullshit, right? But like he's not. He's a really smart fucking doctor, and he's got like these weird witch doctor shit. Is that racist to say? I should stop worrying about it. I shouldn't.
I don't think witch doctor.
You can probably say witch doctor.
Is it weird to say voodoo? I should just say hocus pocus. That's right.
No, that's the worst.
No,
don't fucking say that. You piece of shit. Get the fuck out of here.
I don't think. Witch doctor is all you know. It's clear you're not trying to.
Yeah,
you're not trying to be racist. You're not talking about.
I ain't trying to be.
Yeah, sometimes
you're not.
But yeah, there is a proactive stance where it's like I want to try not to be. I don't know.
It's not like you know what is it? Spear chuck. It's not.
Yeah, no.
You're not being that. That would be racist.
You did not.
It's racist to say cotton picking. I don't know if we're getting into territory.
Yes, that is racist. Yes,
but that is racist.
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't say that.
I didn't say that.
Witch doctor is, you know, it's a fantasy.
Yeah. So anyway, so
you might as well say alchemist.
That's a good way of putting it. He seems like some kind of some weird ass alchemist kind of fucking weirdo.
That's Western centric.
God damn it. Motherfucker.
I'm just fooling around
China,
a little bit.
China got alchemy.
Flaxing and fooling.
So anyway, so he seems like an insane motherfucker with these things, but they're actually like he can actually use those for real things. So he seems like extra smart or something. He seems extra smart.
And he does the weird smile thing. Just
yes.
That like one
what
time.
What the fuck was that? What the fuck was that? Why did they do that?
Just to fuck with us.
Just to fuck with us.
Neelix is like this opportunist. Like he's like Barry Lyndon or something. Like you know that movie Barry Lyndon.
Yeah.
Like, he just schemes his way through life, and like he's schemed his way onto the Voyager. Like that's what,
you're absolutely
that's what he
did. He was a schemer.
it's like picaresque fiction.
A little schemer.
Like he was talking about like what humans lack for in biology, they make up for in like some kind of food, Chinese food or something like that.
Yeah, he
was into the Chinese food.
Yeah, but
he'd been to San Francisco.
Right, but what do humans lack biologically? I mean, I understand, like, yes, you got Klingons have like backup organs
He was just saying
he was just dumping on humans.
Yeah, he was just that's what I want to know. It's like, what's so great about his biology? Because he could fucking smile like an asshole. Like,
yes,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, I was reading about Dr. Yeah. Phlox, and Dr. Phlox has like several wives.
Yes,
and
right.
He's from a society where everybody kind of shares everybody else.
Yeah,
so like,
everyone
so
has
like
several
his
spouses.
His wives have several husbands.
So they probably are all like degrees of separation. They're probably just like literally one kind of extended family.
It's sort of like Iceland where everybody's related.
I didn't know that about Iceland. But
in,
it would make
Iceland,
sense because
Iceland they had to, come up with this. Well, they came up with this app to help determine like.
No, so you didn't fuck your.
So you didn't like, date your cousin.
Because there's like two last names or something.
Because they've been on that island for like over 1,000 years, like by themselves.
Because I am. How many thousand years old is he? I am 1,000 years old.
Sure, you say that's old.
I'm trying to find. I had some note somewhere about his smile because, like, he also said something.
Y'all talking about Phlox's smile?
I'm talking
about
Phlox's.
Phlox is like that plant that kind of grows up between, like, concrete. It's like it's a weed.
Is it called
an urban sort of weed? It's called Phlox. It sort of it like grows out, like covers the ground. If you let it go, it'll grow up through your parking lot or sidewalk. And
so another interesting fact
that's
about
a Phlox.
When you're comparing, so I already mentioned that this is the first pilot. Is it the only pilot? It might be the only pilot that has.
She's my only friend.
It starts on Earth, you know, and in fact the bulk, you know, certainly the beginning is on Earth, right? So that's different than the other shows. But what's similar is
Jesus Christ,
Jesse's having a sneeze.
He blew his nose and then sneezed his brain.
Here it comes. Oh, there it is. Oh, he's falling over. That's hilarious. Limited app.
That line about the breadstick line that T'Pol was given, where she's like, "Any, put your mind to it, anything is possible," and she puts a fork in a breadstick.
Yeah, that was weird. Dumb.
Anyway, I'm sorry. That was I just noticed. Okay, you were talking about the opening. Because like,
remember how we were talking before about how the similarity of some of the previous Star Trek pilots about, you know, the environmental catastrophe and, you know, all that other, you know, playing God, different perspectives on the concept of a God creature. This is interesting because Enterprise starts out and Klingon politics are a key important thing. And we're going to see next week that on Discovery, Klingon politics are key and important.
Yeah, everyone's like really into Klingon politics because they haven't, it's like, because you kind of wonder, like, how do they have a political system? How do they have any kind of system whatsoever?
Yeah.
Remember, and they even have science. They had that the Klingon blood scientist at the end when they tested like that blood. The
Klingon blood
scientist. Well, yeah. Like, so the Klingons have probably been in space longer than we have.
Right, and so it's fascinating. And like, yeah, and they have these ancient looking buildings.
All
and
that
shit
blood
like
science
that.
Was pretty wild.
Yeah, the blood science, the ancient
looking
building.
Some pretty good science.
And then you're talking about, but you probably point out the part where it's like, there's, I didn't think about that. There's a lot of focus on like the political infrastructure of Klingons, of all things.
And they did a lot of that, of course, on Next Generation.
It's some sort
and
of.
On Deep Space Nine,
it's
they did
ancient.
A lot of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's the culture, of course, and interesting because they some, I don't know, I don't remember if it's overtly stated or if it's just hinted at, but for example, the Klingons not having particularly advanced medical technology, they're not rubes, but they don't care that much because they're not as focused on like healing people because they're the whole warrior thing.
Right.
But on the other hand, they're really great with ships. They're really great with weapons. You know, and their buildings are kind of awesome.
Yeah, their buildings are fucking tight.
I bet their pain sticks are like really good.
Yeah, I bet they
like really in like when you look at the variety of pain sticks that are available just out on the open market from the Orion traders, like
they
Klingon
to,
ones.
They like to eat like all sorts ones. Of live like tentacle little things.
Yeah,
and,
like,
funny little worms and nasty sauce on top.
When that Klang dude was like speaking gibberish when he was dying, and she goes like. He's talking about eating the afterlife. He said he said Stovelcore. I was able to pick it out. I was like, he said Stovelcore.
Yeah,
which is like afterlife. I'm awesome.
We are awesome.
I found. Anyways, this is we're past it now. But I found the thing about Phlox when he does that. Yeah, it's at 22 minutes and 15 seconds. He has that fucking bullshit smile. He goes. Optimism, Captain. And he doesn't give a smile.
Oh, yeah, optimism.
Optimism, Captain. Not necessarily.
Because humans have all the optimism. Not necessarily. That's all humans have. They have optimism.
Errol's internet.
Yeah. they blundered into warp drive technology and they just have a bunch of optimism.
Yeah, that's pretty much
it. They used to be a bunch of like horrible like warmongering racists, but now they have a bunch of optimism and accidental work.
I'm reading my notes and I have a note here that just says Archer talks to his dog and has a comfortable penis.
All right. You're thinking about his snuggly room.
Yeah, his room is pretty
cozy. When he's talking to his dog, is that when he's wearing those briefs that are
Yeah.
That's what you were talking about.
Yeah. He's all chilling.
Yeah. Oh, that scene where when Jesse, you were talking about like humans bumbling and being like, so that reminded me of like how T'Pol was dissing on Archer and Tucker for eating steak or whatever.
Yeah.
That reminded me every time somebody in a show, a movie or a show, when people are eating steak specifically and talking and delivering lines, it really grosses me out because they like breathe really heavily through their nose. They're like chewing on their steak then they take a bite. They're like,
yeah. Well, okay. Like when you
I'll throw a football over the mountains over
when
there.
You're
like,
when you're an actor
dynamite.
and you do a scene where you're eating, you have to just keep doing the scene.
Yeah,
right.
Like spit it
eating,
out. Right.
So you're if you're actually eating it, you're like, that's probably not the smart thing to do is to actually eat it. Like you're just supposed to spit it out.
But steak, it looks like they're chewing on cut or some shit.
Yeah, so they're just sitting there chewing on some steak.
Yeah, right.
Because they don't want to start just like eat a bunch of fucking steak.
Yeah,
like,
right. It's fucking, anyways, that always makes me uncomfortable in shows.
So I think we should start talking about what we've been, we haven't even been dancing around it. We haven't mentioned it all, but what is potentially
the sweet spot,
the most problematic part.
It's about halfway between the grab generator and the bow plate.
Okay, first that was some fucking Charlie and the Chocolate Factory shit.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
That shit was pretty hilarious. Oh, quick note, right? Because we talked about most of the other characters, but we didn't talk about Mayweather really. or Malcolm Reed. Now, I really like Malcolm. I think his characters, the Malcolm Reed, he's like the weapons security guy, and right. he plays that well. He's a nice dude, but you can tell he's got that kind of thing, like that he's obsessed with, like, you know, getting strong weapons and getting all the shields all set up and mm-hmm. stuff. That's his job. And Hoshi is really interesting because she's a genius with languages and wants to learn more, but she doesn't really want to be traveling in space. And I think she does that character. That
she doesn't like going so fast. It makes
she's uncomfortable with the ship. She's uncomfortable actually mm-hmm. like being in dangerous situations. I think the one
when they were down in engineering, she was like, "You shouldn't be standing next to that shit."
Dude, I love that. That's another scene with a great reaction because Archer just has this look of like exasperated resignation. He's just like, "Okay, I'm just gonna drop that one." It's like, because he's like, "Ugh," and so he just like goes on with his line, but he gives her this look. I thought that was an amazing part.
But I think one of the characters that. It certainly, at least initially, that I think they didn't quite get right, and it's not the actor. I think the actor's great, but is Mayweather, right?
Mm.
He's a cool character. He's fun, but again, I think they were kind of trying to do the Harry Kim thing with him.
Yeah, they
Trip,
were. Yeah, I think they were.
But the problem is they made a mistake in his background because on the one hand, the actor is portraying him as a newbie, a young guy, a guy who's got this literally wide-eyed fascination with going fast and exploring the universe and like great. Except then they make his background that he's one. He like grows up on like space freighters and stuff.
He's like he was born in space and he grew up in space.
So being in space, he should have been more world weary about the whole space thing and characterized more like, thank God I'm out of that like freighter business because I want to fucking go fast. I don't want to be lumbering around on some like old ass rickety ass trucks basically.
Yeah.
Instead, it was like this weird optimistic, like, ooh, look at this ship. This ship is all right. Look at this ship.
No, yeah, you're right. He had this
ship has like doors and shit.
That's what it is. He did. He had this sort of like newbie optimism about him that didn't really make any sense. And he made that weird joke about the whole three tit joke.
That was funny.
First hand, second hand, third hand. That's low hanging fruit.
That joke. And the third hand's the penis, right?
Yeah, totally. That's how I thought of it.
That's your third hand.
Or the inside out butthole.
Well, and the funny thing is you kind of. He's a great character. It's just that it's a weird little disconnect there. And not a big deal, but you notice it in the pilot. Like after that, it doesn't really make any difference.
His disposition is a little too sunny, I would say. I don't know.
Yeah.
And also, Trip is the engineer. Like, wouldn't that be something everyone would know about the sweet spot, like where you could float around in the ship? Like everyone in Starfleet would know about that because it's badass. You get to fucking float around in a ship. But Trip's the engineer. He's the chief engineer.
He all came in and he was like, "What are you doing like, up there, Ensign?"
Yeah, and he's like, "Just push off." And he's like,
"Ensign, you're upside down."
He gave him that look. It's like, "Push off. Push off. What?"
And then he looked all awkward when he was doing it.
And then it was totally like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory. He did the same kind of moves and everything.
Yeah.
Do you think you get nothing?
Nothing.
You lose.
Do you think they had? How do you think they did the effects for that? Do you think they used a ropey rope?
No, they took him up into space.
Yeah, I take them into space. Okay, that seemed to be
the
most practical.
It's the easiest way to do it.
No, do you think they did any of that diving plane shit like they did in Apollo? Was it Apollo 13
where they
dove the planes?
No. They probably definitely didn't do that. You could do like upside down sets or something, but I don't think they even had to do that. I think they just did some
ropey ropes
and sideways sets or whatever. I don't know. We should look it up.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Ropes.
Shooting ropes. Okay, no.
What if Cochrane had said where no one has gone before instead of where no man has gone before? Do you think people would have gotten really pissed off? I don't know. I just had that written down.
I think back then it wasn't.
So
what did piss me off about that is he said to go boldly.
Go boldly.
And the reason that pissed me off is because the whole gag for fucking years, right, was Kirk and Gene Roddenberry, they're all morons because they ended the sentence and the preposition or whatever, you know, like the dangling part is whatever. To boldly go
before.
You're not supposed to end doing the word go, right?
Go.
Right? Now, all the grammar people are like, look at these fucking pieces of shit. You can't say go at the end. You can't boldly go. You have to go boldly. It has to be in that order. Oh. Then I find out from Stephen Fry, no less, of an authority on linguistics and language, that is in fact not true because of a whole bunch of complicated linguistic stuff about where the derivations are coming from the Latin versus the Greek and all that other stuff in terms of how the order of the conjugation and the syntax goes. Long story short, totally okay grammatically. In official, archaic, proper English
motherfuckers
rules,
from England.
You can boldly go. It's cool. You're fine.
I was always certain that I could boldly go.
The Pope is not going to come down and fuck up your shit because you are boldly going. Or Canterbury.
The Archbishop of Canterbury.
It depends. You know what? Where?
Don't tell me what I can't Urbary.
Sorry. Now I kind of don't want to do this anymore.
I'm sorry. I was. In my head, it didn't work, and I was like, don't worry, you'll sort it all out by the time it comes out of your mouth. It didn't work out.
I went to that place. I went to Canterbury.
Okay, but before we wrap it up, because we got to wrap it up soon, but I do think we need to talk about the most important and potentially most problematic thing, which is this whole temporal Cold War.
Okay, first of all, when people say that bullshit of like, when are we? Where are you? When are you? Where are you? When? That whole thing. They did that, and I had the line in front of me. They did that whole, like, when they do the whole when joke, when mislead, when you use when instead of, sorry, that didn't, I should have had the line pulled up. Anyways, go with what you were saying. I'm going to disject from that.
No, the temporal Cold War, right? So, what do you think about that? What was the deal? What did you think about that storyline? I mean, at least the beginning of that storyline.
It's kind of weird to throw that out there and, like, you know, all of a sudden they're talking to this weird guy, future guy.
It felt like they were trying to, I guess, like, when I was watching it, I was waiting for a payoff. And then I realized, okay, I guess this is just the setup for the series or something. But it just didn't feel satisfying somehow. It just didn't feel like there wasn't enough of a resolution in the episode, I felt. I felt like the episode, even though it was a setup for the future, I still felt like there needed to be some more of a resolution with that. It just kind of felt like it was...
Yeah, because like, you know, they got away from those people and they took the guy back to Kronos or whatever. And like, that was how it ended.
And that one guy, that one Suliban was like, can you bring my friend back to life? And he's like, oh, it wasn't part of the deal for us to bring your friend back to life. It's like, well, why not? What, is there some kind of master plan? I don't know. It just seemed like they could just kind of do whatever with that. I don't know.
I had a couple problems with it. But, okay, let me back up. In the terms of just as a story, it is an interesting mystery. It's like, this is cool. What's going to happen? Blah, blah, blah. Sci-fi, cool beans, et cetera, et cetera. However, this was portrayed, this was advertised and put together as a prequel show. And like Voyager, not as badly, but like Voyager, in the pilot, they undermine idea. Voyager, we're going to be lost forever over here. Maquis are with us. We have internal drama because we don't like each other, et cetera, et cetera. That'll play out over seasons. No, it won't. It's actually pretty well settled by the end of the episode. Yeah. Enterprise, I don't think it's as problematic because the temporal Cold War storyline at least has the potential to be interesting and piques your interest. But it immediately introduces right away this concept of, okay, we're watching this prequel, but now there's all this time manipulation stuff. Like, is it going to affect the future we know or not? Are they giving them an out? Like, what exactly?
Right.
And those aliens were like, they were genetically modified in some like crazy ass way.
Yeah. I didn't know if
that's like, yeah.
I didn't know if that whole alien thing, because they made several references to the aliens. Like, for example, was it Phlox was like, oh, they're no more evolved than humans, you know, just kind of like neutrally. Right. Interestingly enough, like T'Pol later is like talking about how primitive they were. She's like, the Suliban, we don't know nothing other than they're like relatively primitive.
Right, exactly.
And so, which was a dig on humans. But then you take that with the idea that it was also said in that episode that they were basically soldiers. They didn't have any agency basically in what was going on. They just carried out the actions of this future guy, right? And so what Patrick was saying about it being like an out, right? Like you were saying, it was like
maybe I don't know.
Well, I mean, but like what you were saying, that one idea, it's like you're, it's kind of like what, where are you going with this? Is this just kind of like a total fucking tool to like just do whatever you want with shit?
Yeah.
I was wondering if like the whole Suliban thing, there was supposed to be some kind of like, I don't know, thing about people and technology. It's like people selling out their shit for technology. I don't know if
again it goes.
Of,
there was no consistent. Kind of, there wasn't a theme.
I don't know if there was like an. It was supposed to be an allegory for something. Yeah, I couldn't figure. Yeah, there was.
It
no
was
theme
pieces of different themes.
Right.
I was reading kinda that, like, together. I guess they kind of figured that they didn't really have anything clear. They were just kind of putting it out, and it became something that was limiting for them. And when they were trying to write the show, they originally thought that this was going to be some sort of Romulan guy that's fucking with the Klingons.
Oh, so this is what you read?
Yeah, this is what I was reading. But I also read, like, from the same sources, I was just reading this on Wikipedia, that one of the producers was like, yeah, that was Archer, like, messing with his own timeline from the
future.
That
was supposed to be Archer?
That was something that...
Oh, yeah, I remember
that
rumor going around.
Brandon Braga said this
Braga.
Maybe several years ago on Twitter.
Mm. Was he trolling?
Yeah, maybe he was, like, just trolling, but that's what he said.
Trolling.
Like, all, you know... That was what I read was like, okay, he said this back in like 2012, 2011 on Twitter that this was Archer messing with his own timeline from the future. And then like, the next sentence is like, but they had initially said that this was probably some sort of Romulan.
It was a rap. So, but, and I don't even know how did this end up panning out, because that's the other thing is I don't remember how this shit pans out.
Because
I remember watching the show, like I stopped remembering that part, because I had to rewatch that part a few times. I was like, wait a minute, what is this time thing?
And
like,
show lurched back and forth because they kept trying to retool it because it wasn't doing very well in the ratings. And so they kind of careened one way and then careened the next way. And in the fourth season, actually, it was pretty solid. Fourth season is when they started doing sort of mini arcs.
Right, yeah.
Because like the third season was the big, long season-long arc, pretty much, you know, with a little independent here and there, but basically the thrust was the whole Zindi thing. And then the fourth season, they had these kind of three-episode arcs.
Yeah, right. They had these chunks. Weird... Yeah, that was an interesting idea that they had. Sometimes it would get a little tedious, but I thought the idea was interesting. Yeah. But when you were saying like, is it an out? That was really kind of what, like, was that we don't know. Like, that's the thing. But that's
what
it felt like.
Studio like make them do that.
When you talk about time,
we want you to be able to see Kirk.
Yeah, like when you talk about time stuff, I feel like it has to be, because time stories by nature are already problematic. They're always going to be, no matter what.
Yeah,
you just kind of
overpowered.
But you accept that if they're tightly put together. And I'm not saying I'm someone who knows what the answer is. Obviously, I don't know shit. But like, if they're tightly put together, they're fun and interesting. And you're like, oh, that's why. Oh, there's that. Oh. Oh, that's up. You know, that kind of thing. Right. Excuse me.
But you could say that time travel and temporal disturbances is like, that's like a pillar of Star Trek.
It is,
like,
but here's the deal though, right? And I think this, you made me think of this, Dan. This is what adds to the problem of this plot point is time travel. Totally cool in sci-fi, totally common in Star Trek.
It can be totally rad.
But the purpose of the time travel in any given story that we consider a good time travel story is to create the conditions for the drama between the characters.
Mm-hmm.
The time is not, the point is not, oh, cool, they time travel.
Yeah, right.
That's awesome.
Yeah, right.
No, the point is, oh my God, the ship is going through a loop and keeps exploding.
And it was his mother the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, like, what?
But the time loop in, you know, when you're talking about, like, you know, doesn't have to be the time loop one. Any of the things, like the episode where Picard, like the Picard from like 6 hours in the future or past, I forget, you know, like he can't talk because he's all confused. Like that kind of thing. That's interesting because it creates a scenario that leads to an interesting story.
Right.
This seemed more like, oh, look, there's time travel and look at this cool admittedly very cool effect of they're walking in the time room and it's all like blah, blah, blah.
Okay,
blah,
yeah,
blah.
That time room, that was another aspect of that whole idea that was problematic. Like, when he fucking shot the laser at fucking Archer, he shot Archer with the laser. He's like, haha, I'm gonna get you, see?
It was all slow.
It was all slow, and Archer's like, what? And he dodges the laser.
Part of it hit him, but that didn't. Yeah. That part didn't matter, like, and he dodged the other part.
Why did that happen? Why is this guy in a time room shooting lasers when he doesn't know how it fucking works in the time room?
Exactly. Mundo.
Well, yeah, exactly.
If you're gonna build a time room, why not do it with some style?
Just fucking rehearse. Rehearse it a little bit first. It's like when O'Brien in DS9 was all like, I've never done this before. Hey, I've never done this before. Ooh, doggy.
My name's Miles O'Brien.
My name is Miles O'Brien. Ooh, I've never done this before. When he like transported Odo and like he's like, I don't know, I had never done this before, and he kicks it and works, and there was a few things like that in DS9,
yeah,
which is not really a knock on the episode. It's just kind of funny. It's like, didn't you think to plan ahead? But this one, it was just like, this was problematic because it's like he fucking had him and he shot him. I know it's just kind of like, oh, he could, if he got it, didn't get out that way, he could have just, a piano could have fallen on his head instead. It could have been anything. But it's just like, kind of like, come on, man, you didn't fucking know how your time room worked and you're just shooting phasers off. I guess Archer used that to like disrupt the time room so he could go back to normal speed or
it
something.
It wasn't clear.
It didn't make any fucking sense.
It wasn't clear.
It was totally, it was chaos. It was total fucking chaos. And it goes along with the theme you're saying with the fucking,
it was a madhouse.
It was a madhouse. The whole time aspect, there was chaos. There was no, there was nothing tied up. There was no feeling that, there was nothing making me feel like it was going anywhere.
Precisely.
And it was all random.
So, and this is where Voyager actually did much better, basically purely because of its concept, which is at the end of Voyager, pluses and minuses of that episode, largely a good episode, but pluses and minuses, whatever the caretaker business, any problems you might have with that, it's very easy to understand what's happening next. Voyager's trapped in the Delta Quadrant. They're going to try to make it home. They will encounter obstacles along the way, right? Very simple. Deep Space Nine, much more complex story, mm-hmm. but it still leaves you thinking, oh my God, this was the backwater of space. Now there's this wormhole. There's going to be commerce. What are these aliens all about?
Right.
What's going to happen with the Bajorans and the Cardassians? Is Sisko going to be able to run this like crazy? Like, your brain cannot contemplate how many options there are ahead of you, but they are concrete. They make sense. There are a bunch of concrete things that you can guess are going to happen and look forward to seeing how they unfold. In Enterprise, it's got a little of that, but it's kind of like, we got a new spaceship.
Yeah.
We're going to go further than we usually go.
Oh, by the way, before you go on this away mission, here's some phasers. There's stun and kill. Here you go. Set them on the right ones.
We're gonna meet.
Make sure you learn the difference.
Yeah, learn the difference. We haven't given these to anyone yet. You're going on a mission. Here's some phasers. The first time you've ever had these.
It's like giving a kid a 5-year-old. Like a 5-year-old, like a machine gun.
Yeah.
But then they're gonna go. They're gonna go explore, and they're gonna meet aliens that we already know about, but they don't. Then they'll interact with them and stuff. You know, the some of the flaws in the prequel premise, they're not flaws, but they're challenges. I think that's a better term, mm-hmm. because it's possible to do them well. And I think Enterprise often did do them well.
Yeah.
But if you're watching the pilot, you're kind of, you're hedging your bets a little. And I can understand why people like Jesse's a good example, where you kind of watch it. And even though it's pretty entertaining in a lot of ways, you're kind of, yeah, like, I don't know, is it worth investing the time in this? Because
where is this going?
Where is it? Is it going to? Yeah. Are they going to meet the challenge of making it interesting to tell this story? Even though we know what's going to happen in 100 years, you know, with TOS and all that.
I remember reading some article briefly way back when it came out, and it was some random person. I can't even remember most of it, but like the article was basically saying, like, I've been watching Enterprise and I couldn't figure out what it was that what their point of Enterprise is. And it was like, I figured it out. It's all about the characters. And like, apparently that was their big revelation in the article, is that it was about the characters and their interaction. It was character driven. I didn't really know.
Initially the point of the series.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much of a revelation that is.
Right. Like, yeah. That article was like saying, like, I figured it out, basically. Yeah. And this was way long ago. But so that was the point. It was supposed to be more character driven and less, like, I guess that's what you guys are saying, though, about it's more accessible.
Yeah. That was part of the more accessible bit.
The more accessible.
Osmotic eel.
Osmotic.
It actually, for like a couple seasons, wasn't called
Star Trek Enterprise. It was just called Enterprise.
Yeah, the first two seasons, it was just Enterprise. That's right. Which is also weird. And didn't have any star dates, which was kind
of
cool.
Yeah, April 16th, 2151. No star date. That was one of the dates. April 16th, 2151. As long as he returns for more eel therapy tomorrow.
Eels.
So, before, as we wrap it up...
liquid phosphorus. I wouldn't have expected that beneath a layer of cyclohexane.
Shut the fuck up.
Really?
Oh, that,
because
that does...
I normally would expect to find lots of liquid.
That brings up,
right?
That brings up that's the counterexample of the point I forgot to make, which was that another key difference in the vibe of this show is they made a concerted effort to not use as much technobabble. And not to rely on as much, because Voyager really went fucking nuts with that. They would use technobabble to cause the problem, technobabble to have the solution.
I think they were headed in that direction, and Voyager was just like, okay, we got to lay it all out on the table right now and get it over with. Like, just fucking shoot it all over. There was one line, though, that was like, I was like, what? Because it was Tucker and Archer were in that Suliban's polygon like ship. Or whatever.
Yeah, that was pretty
polyhedron,
cool.
Whatever. But at one point, Archer was like, bring the docking interface online. And then, you know, Tucker's looking all spaced out, like, oh, and he's like, oh, there it is. And then Archer goes, the coaxial ports?
Yeah, I know, right?
Like, what the fuck are they like?
No, the RCA ports.
Yeah, right.
Piece of shit.
What are they doing with coaxial ports in the future, and how does it have anything to do with docking a goddamn fucking space motherfucker?
Y'all got HDMI up on this shit?
Yeah, right.
They
exactly.
didn't have any HDMI.
Right, they didn't have HDMI. No, we only got those fucking prongs.
We got some component cables.
We got the prongs with the screws in it that you put in the back, and
with
then
the
you
green
put the
and
switch,
the blue
the RF
cores.
Switch.
I can go in through the printer port.
Yeah, no, you can't dock this ship. Can't dock this ship, Jesse. See, fuck off.
So what did you...
So I mean, maybe that was a... But real quick, maybe that was an
Wi-Fi.
Attempt...
Wi-Fi? What the fuck is that?
Maybe that was an attempt to like make the technobabble Wi-Fi. More relatable. It's like, oh, coaxial. We know what that was.
I think that's a fair point. Yeah. I think that's likely. Yeah. So real quick, what do you think are... What are just, you know, one or two things that you thought were done really well, and what are a couple things that were like really bad? I know we talked about a couple of them, but if there's anything else that like jumped out at you...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I liked kind of everything. I mean, I sort of said it
I like the butterfly ladies.
No, I really like that. I love that concept.
Cool,
I thought it was so interesting. It's just this sort of they're supposed to be like this kind of like
it was Star Trek-y alien
Star Trek-y
shit.
Sexy scantily clad dancing, and then they're fucking eating butterflies.
Because
yeah,
that wasn't Star Wars style alien sexiness. That was
right.
like Star
pretty
Trek.
Star
yeah,
style.
That was
yeah.
exactly
you know?
Right. 80 polyguttural dialects constructed with an adaptive syntax.
Oh,
that's
polyguttural.
Okay. She was like all about those kids that she was teaching. She like was like, I can't
oh,
leave
yeah.
these kids. I
yeah.
can't leave these
and
kids.
And they're all going like,
But she was like all about like being a fucking awesome teacher until she found out she was going to get paid with some new language. Like, and then she
yeah.
was like,
oh,
although
shit. Klingon.
I got the impression there was a couple missing scenes in
yeah.
this episode, and there seemed to be something edited out, mm-hmm. like probably for time, I'm guessing. Something about the Hoshi Archer stuff seemed a little off. I just mean like it just seemed like there were some sentences skipped or something.
I mean, it wasn't a terribly interesting. It was a necessary part, but it wasn't a very terribly interesting part. So
yeah.
I can understand why they would feel like it.
I really liked the repeated TOS style music cues, especially particularly with instruments. Especially when they're on Rigel and they meet like the Suliban woman.
Oh,
and
right.
There were a couple like just undertones of, you know, like the fucking bassoons and like there's some like fucking, you know, very characteristic Trek style, like little toots and bleats.
I missed that.
But then there was an Enterprise style where she fucking starts making out with him, and she's like, "I've been given the ability to measure trust, but it requires close contact."
Yeah,
I was like,
good.
"What
I forgot
the
about
fuck
that.
You?"
That
man.
Was another. That's another.
Like, that was
dumb.
Not fucking necessary, man.
That was weird.
That was weird. It was fucking weird. But no, but whatever. It's fine, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know.
But when they left, and also when they left the dock, star dock or whatever, and T'Pol's like, we're off by 0.2 degrees, because they're like aiming for some far off Klingon planet. It's like, we're off by 0.2 degrees. I didn't know if that was just kind of like, anyways, I didn't know if that was like, I guess they were just doing that to make her seem like, oh, she's precise and Vulcan and she's logical and like, she's trying to like piss them off because they're casual Earth people. I don't know. Anyway, that was fine. I didn't really have a problem with that.
Casual just, Earth people.
Casual. What else? Is there much? There wasn't much else.
Y'all got any casual Earth people around here?
I really liked, other than just the vibe of the episode and how dreamy fucking, what's his name is?
Scott Bakula
is, and you know Trip Tucker. He's not so bad.
You wouldn't kick him out of the warp core. Sorry.
I'd save him from dying in the warp core.
Doesn't even make any sense.
But I
don't know what I'm saying.
I like the accessible vibe of it.
I like the accessible vibe of it.
I like non-accessibility too. But I like things. I like things that are really non-accessible.
Yeah, it's
but,
it's large.
I usually do.
Yeah, I usually do too. And I like
you like to reach around for things. Not reach around, but reach into crevasses and find things.
Crevasse.
The thing of the problem with the future is the trombones never get rusty.
Wait, is that like a philosophical axiom?
If you could say that. Play some rusty trombone.
Some meditative shit.
I really like, and this is kind of like a side thing I already mentioned. I think I mentioned a little bit with Voyager one scene with Janeway where I really like just like some of the like subtle facial reactions, and maybe they're not that subtle, but like
Janeway was good at that.
Yeah, and but like in this episode, there was a lot of cool like reactions. Like I said, where Archer was responding to Hoshi, like giving her this when she's like, yeah, "Should you be standing so close to that?" And he's just like, ugh. And like, you know, and then like when Archer and Trip catch like. To Paul, not in a lie, but she withheld the information about Rigel.
Oh, yeah.
She just gave this like she's like you know like, just these little sort of reactions here and there. I thought that was just you know I don't know if it's just incidental, but I thought it was.
I think great acting.
Yeah, I think the acting is solid and yeah, even though the show felt a little aimless, and you're kind of wondering why it's there. But I still appreciate that it is there.
Yeah, well produced, but it was similar to Voyager. There was a, sort of almost like a lapse in the writing where they were really good at writing up to the mid-90s to a certain point, and then they kind of were trying to evolve and figure out not just Star Trek, but I think their TV in general, and then they kind of got the golden age of TV came in or whatever we're supposed to call like the Breaking Bad and everything, you know, the Sopranos,
the golden
age. Started to write stuff properly.
Oh, real quick.
The now time.
When the Klingon said some shit to Archer, and Archer was like, I have a feeling he said thank you. And he's like, what did you say? And she's like, you don't want to know. And he's like, what do you mean I don't want to know? Of course I want to fucking know.
Yeah,
just
don't put that line in there.
Ensign Tanner was played by Evan English, and it was uncredited. Netflix doesn't give you much time to decide that you don't want to skip the end credits. You get a few seconds. Like,
that's right.
Fucking
Netflix.
There's IMDb.
Yeah, but I just kind of like chilling
like maybe
on the.
Maybe
on
I want to hear this song.
Yeah, I like chilling on the. Let's hope that's the last time somebody takes a shot at us. Ha ha ha. And then I had googly fingers. I think that was in reference to the Sulaban's hand going goofy.
Oh yeah, that was
googly.
Some googly stuff. How about you, Jesse? Any last thoughts?
No, I don't really have anything to add. I don't think. I'm sorry.
Me neither.
That's all I got.
Me neither. I think that's all I got with this one. Good episode. It was fun. Look, you know, I think here's a good example. When I watched the Voyager pilot, I enjoyed it. I was like, this is cool. I did not have any part of me that was like, I should start my Voyager rewatch now.
Right, right.
Enterprise, I was kind of like when Netflix was about to play the next episode, I was kind of like, I kind of watched the next episode, yeah. But I decided not to. But
it
I was
played
like,
the next episode while I was sleeping. I felt like one of the times I was watching the pilot, I fell asleep.
Yeah. But it definitely, I would have considered to keep going. In fact, I might go back and start watching some more Enterprise right now, you know?
I had actually rewatched a bunch of it a few years ago, but I still felt an urge to watch it again simply because now I'm more interested to see how this time thing plays out, not because it drew me in, but I'm just kind of like, wait a minute, I don't remember this having anything to do with anything. So I want to see the point that they kind of forget about it.
Yeah, because they do forget about it, and then they try to close the loop on that later. I just don't remember how. Mm. But anyway.
And the unfunny line I said was about the timeline. When people go like, where is it? When is it? He said, don't be concerned with when. I repeated it again. I should have just cut my losses last time I said that. I don't know.
Yeah, I it's been so long since you mentioned that. Yeah. I can't really remember, but I'm leaving it in.
I'm sorry. That was poor decision making on my part.
You were like really fucking gung ho about it.
Yeah, it's like you have to the thing is you understand what I'm saying. It's just like, okay, yeah, Dan, okay.
It was cool. That was a weak ass cliche line. Anyway.
Porthos is cute.
Thank you very much.
Hot Dick.
Enterprise pilot. Next week on H. Scott Star Trek.
I just sounded like I said Porthos is cute and he has a hot dick. That's not what I meant to say.
I was thinking
of Porthos is cute, but then I thought about Archer in his undies.
Archer has the hot dick. Yeah. Porthos dick we're not clear on.
Yeah, and Pucker penis or Tucker.
Tucker.
Tucker. Trip Tucker.
Trip Tucker penis.
Pucker.
Next week. We jump way ahead in the future, a million years. This was 2001. We jump forward to 2018 or whatever for Discovery.
Penis Pucker.
The first new Star Trek on in a long time, ushering in a new renaissance of Star Trek. Your opinions of Discovery aside, they're going to do Picard and a million other shows.
Yeah, like once Enterprise was canceled, there wasn't any Star Trek for like, it was like 17 years.
Yeah, we thought it was never coming back.
That was like the longest.
And now we'll probably have it forever.
Or at least 17 years?
Is that a...
It was the first time in 17 years that there hadn't been Star Trek.
That's fucking wild, man.
Yeah, it is very wild.
So how many episodes is the Discovery one going to cover, though? Is it... Did we decide there was like a lot of expositional shit in the...
The Discovery thing is a good point. We'll figure it out. But I'm going to argue if we're watching the first three... episodes, at least in terms of how CBS All Access shows them, because the first two are kind of like a prequel to the actual pilot, you know, of the show. Because the third episode is where it really gets into like the whole like Discovery thing, but it needs the first two episodes to set that up. You know, we could just do the first episode or something, but to me, I think there's enough in there that it might make sense just to kind of watch those. Or we could do a two-parter. That's another one. I guess the listeners will find out.
Or like a doo-doo farter.
Two-parter
sounds good.
Yeah, might be that.
I can't believe this.
Yeah, so we could watch them and then, like, you know, record what we want to record and then, you know, do the next bit or whatever. So we'll figure it out.
And then we do the animated series.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then by then it'll probably be time for Picard.
Picard.
Picard. Oh. Picard.
Harvey Picard.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. You know, send emails. I'm not going to tell you the email address.
Bebo.
We're not on Facebook. It's got everything on Twitter and on the web. The www.
It's got these w. nuts.
Dot, it's got everything.com. And
everything
I think
else.
If you do a search for Dan Glaubitz.
Oh, shit.
You're gonna find somebody who's not this one. So,
Dan Glaubitz.
Fat chance.
No, there's no other.
There's no other.
No, there are others.
There's a John Glaubitz. Is there a Dan Glaubitz?
You're a John Glaubitz.
I am.
Glaubitz.
I'm a John Daniel.
John Daniel. Jingleheimer Schmidt.
You'll find a Klingon blood scientist.
That guy is your...
He has a Klingon blood scientist named Kapla.
Kapla.
Good night.
The Klingons have demanded that we return Klang immediately.
Admiral.
We may need to defer to their judgment.
We've been deferring to their judgment for 100 years.
John.
How much longer?
Until you've proven you're ready.
Ready to what?
To look beyond your provincial attitudes and your volatile nature.
Volatile? You have no idea how much I'm restraining myself from knocking you on your ass.